Won't you come see me at my favorite club ever, the Denver Comedy Works, even if you don't live in Denver. I don't care where you are, Ireland, whatever. Get on a plane. Come see me at the Denver Comedy Works. I'm going to be there the 20th, the 21st, and the 22nd. And then after that, I'm going to be doing benefit shows at the Orange Peel in Asheville on the 29th. All proceeds outside of travel and the Airbnb we're getting will go to help the good people of Asheville. I hope that you will come and see my show. Greetings, friends. It's me, Dee Trussell, and this is the Doug Trussell Family Hour podcast. Before we get going, I'd like to remind you that we have a members-only area. If you subscribe and become a YouTube member or a Patreon member at patreon.com/DTFH, you'll get commercial-free episodes of this podcast. Also, we are live streaming some of the solo episodes for the members. It's a reason to sign up. And also, when you sign up, you will become aligned with the force of good in the universe, and you will be guaranteed a life of pure bliss, joy, and incredibly powerful squirt-level orgasms when you at last drop your body and transcend into the afterlife. Just subscribe. Become a member. Like. And join us. Become part of the orgasmic collective that is the DTFH true family. You've probably heard of today's guest, Brian Johnson. You've seen his picture all over the press. Not only is he a very successful entrepreneur, but Brian Johnson is engaged in the fight to become immortal. I know that sounds nuts, and I know probably you might have the same reaction to him that I had before this conversation. Skepticism. When I heard half the story about one of the many things he has done in his exploration of what causes us to die and what could extend our lifespan, I remember reading he was doing blood transfusions with his kid. I found that to be a little off-putting. Is he a vampire? We talk about that in this episode. And one of the many things I really appreciated about him is he is not what I was worried he might be. You know, uptight, defensive, weird. No, this guy is cool as fuck. And not only that, but he is the most measured person on planet Earth. Using his protocols, which you can find at Project Blueprint, he has managed to cause what appears to be some kind of reverse aging. There's a way that you can measure the age of a human heart. You could tell, obviously, the age of your liver, the age of your lungs. And because of all the research, all the money that he invested into this project, he's discovering pragmatic ways that all of us can extend our lifespan. And if you're one of those people out there who feels a little superstitious about living longer than whatever you think your lifespan is going to be, he does a really good job of explaining why, of all times in human history, now is the time to do everything you can to stay alive. Everybody, please welcome to the DTFH, Brian Johnson. Brian, so great to meet you.
I'm excited to be here. This is fun.
I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while. You are attempting something that, whether people want to admit it or not, I think most of us would enjoy at least the option of not dying. And you're attempting it, and you're attempting it publicly.
Yeah.
You have a new documentary out on Netflix. Congratulations.
Thanks.
And I think that's the first thing I wanted to talk a little bit about as I was considering what a fascinating life you have. Particularly that you've decided to be so public about this issue, which is weirdly controversial. Why? Why are you sharing all of this? Why are you sharing this story with everybody?
Because everyone is equally as public about drinking alcohol and smoking cigarettes and missing bedtime and eating bad food and consuming toxins and not caring about it.
Yeah.
So, like, why wouldn't we make the opposite also publicly digestible and accessible and viewable? So, I'm basically the equal and opposite of everything going on in society right now.
Right. So, okay. So you look at the world, you see this culture of hedonism, but maybe not even good hedonism. In other words, not like true self-destructive, consciously self-destructive hedonism, but rather a sort of slow drip suicide via a variety of like low-level toxins. And you see that as a maybe a tragic thing.
Yeah, so I think like up until, if you look at time, let's say we go back 200,000 years.
Okay.
To say like from our earliest ancestors up until this point, you could basically say YOLO LOL, right? Like if I'm going to die, I might as well conquer territory and make my empire big.
Yeah.
I might as well name your thing, right? And now it's like I might as well stay up late, drink, smoke. I might as well work myself to the bone. Because you're basically saying I have this very finite time of mortality.
Yes.
And then I'm going to die.
Yes.
And I may have an afterlife or not, but like whatever, I know that's going to happen. And I'm suggesting right now is the first time in the history, our history, that we can say we may not die. It's the biggest shift in our entire history. And when you realize that our entire lives are built around die, you start unpacking that.
Yeah.
It reveals all these little secrets. And so, yeah, I'm basically saying that this is the biggest moment in the history of our species.
Yeah, as I was like thinking, and stoners, we love to think of dumb solutions for global problems that you could never execute. But I remember one idea I had was...
I can't wait for this. Honestly, when did this idea happen?
I don't remember.
Okay.
It bubbles out of my brain, and then I'm like, oh shit, that might work. Which would be some kind of virus.
Okay.
But it makes everyone immortal.
Yeah.
And the moment that everyone is immortal, meaning the only way out is suicide, no one wants to do that.
Yes.
Then suddenly you have to become invested in not just like the climate, but in the climate being good. All the problems, like when you think of like the old men who control nuclear arsenals.
Yes.
How likely are you to start a nuclear war if you're an immortal being?
Exactly.
So it would be some kind of bizarre solution. And this brings me to a real question I had as I was thinking about, should you succeed, you discover something. And I think what you have right now could work, but it ain't going to work for most people.
Yeah, that's right.
No one's going to have a team of doctors. No one can afford that many supplements. Yeah. No one can afford to do what you're doing. But should you somehow zero in on something that is accessible for a lot of people? If you could actually pull that off and you extend the human lifespan, even if you increase it by a quarter.
Yeah.
I wonder, what's your solution for population density?
Yeah. So first, your stoner-based vision is goddamn brilliant.
Thank you!
It is like banger.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So I agree. And I'm actually trying to make your idea practical. I'm trying to create a virus in the form of an ideology.
Okay, sure.
Okay, so this is the very basic premise. AI is moving at a speed that's pretty fast.
Yeah, sure.
Probably faster than any one of us can comprehend.
Yes.
So if you think about it and we say, okay, over the past decade, we've been able to double lifespan with things like we learned about microscopic objects like bacteria. So we started washing our hands.
Yes.
We have vaccines and we have antibiotics.
So yes.
And we have end-of-life care. We have cancer treatments, et cetera, et cetera. So we've made these really big strides, and those discoveries have happened from smart people.
Right.
So now AI is progressing. Just think of AI like more smart people.
Sure.
So now we have like a billion more really smart people, and then we have a billion more geniuses that we've never had before.
Right.
And they're all working on the hardest problems we face, including aging.
Right.
So if you just say over a few years' time, those smart people in the form of AI are probably going to make discoveries at a speed which we have not been able to do before.
Sure.
Which means we're probably going to extend our lifespans even more, which means we want to make even better AI, which makes even more.
Yeah.
And so we really are at this moment where we may be the first generation who won't die, and it's happening right now. So what I'm doing is not going to give me immortality. Going to bed on time and eating the right foods, it's not going to happen. What I'm trying to do is introduce a new philosophy for the species to say, can we just be sober for a minute and realize the insanity of the moment we live? We are the first immortals. And that's so crazy to get your mind around, but it's happening. And so that's what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to say like, but really what I'm saying with all my stuff is I'm trying to go to war with die.
Yeah.
Anything in society, anything that causes you to die, anything that causes Earth to die, anything that causes anything to die is the enemy. It's not each other.
Okay. Let's talk about that angle. Though I don't disagree with you in the sense that I don't want to die. I don't have kids.
Yeah.
And I didn't want my parents to die.
Mm-hmm.
And so I understand that angle. But a lot of people, they don't see it like that.
Yeah.
There's a perspective of the world as a temporary place. You mm-hmm. know, there's any number of variations of Maya illusion.
Yeah.
Training facility, matrix,
yep.
Gnostic soul prison.
Yep.
And the idea of removing death is like sealing the prison door. You don't get to leave anymore.
Yeah.
So that scares a lot of people.
Yeah.
And this is one of the big critiques I've heard about what you're doing, which is you have sort of, you view the world and the natural structure of it as something fixable.
Mm-hmm.
And death, a lot of people look at that not as a problem, but as the way out.
Yeah.
So how do you address that?
Yeah, very simply. So when somebody wakes up in the morning and they say, I'm going to have a great day. I'm not going to eat the croissant for breakfast.
Yes.
I'm not going to eat the cookie for lunch.
Yes.
And I'm not going to have alcohol at dinner. And then guess what happens?
What?
They have the croissant for breakfast. They have the cookie for lunch.
Yeah.
And they have the wine for dinner, right?
Yes.
So who are they? Are they the person who woke up and said, I'm going to have a great day? Or are they the person who ate the cookie? Are they the person who drank the, you know, the wine, et cetera? We are different people.
Right.
All day long.
Yes.
It depends on our biochemical state. It depends on how well we slept.
Yes.
We are not consistent rational beings.
Right.
We will say we want one thing one second, and we will do something entirely opposite to that the next second.
Absolutely.
We are not reliable narrators of our life, of our wants, of our desires.
Right.
We're schizophrenic.
Yes.
And that yet, but we like kind of, we move all those things aside. We're like, no, I'm a single rational person
right.
who knows what I want. There was a study a couple of years ago where this woman, she treated ALS patients, and she would tell her family, she would say, if I'm ever, you know, diagnosed with ALS and I'm ever in that situation, pull the plug.
Yeah.
Guess what happened? She got diagnosed with ALS and she went down that terrible path and she lost all motor function. Eventually she's in bed. The only thing she can do is blink her eyes. Her family's there and they ask her, do you want us to pull the plug? She says, no. We imagine that we may not want life when we're 80 years old. We may imagine we don't want to live forever. We are not trustworthy narrators of existence. Like you talk to an 80-year-old, even when they're in like this really decrepit state, like they want tomorrow. Like they want to see loved ones tomorrow, even though they hurt and it's terrible. So yeah, I think that in short, I don't think any one of us is trustworthy on any of our opinions about reality. Like we're schizophrenic all day long and we prove this to ourselves. So if you have enough self-awareness, you realize that you can't say something about your future self wants that will not be contradicted eventually by yourself.
Well, then what's the difference between your point of view? I mean, this is also equally schizophrenic. If we're all shifting between points of view, then it sort of irrelevantizes what you're saying, right? Like what you're saying is also going to change, especially if you live forever.
So the thing that is constant for all of us is I don't want to die right now. That's it. My entire philosophy, my entire thing is that singular statement. And it's basically saying you don't want to die right now.
You know what? I think you found the thing. You found the woo-woo thing. What connects all of us?
Yes.
What bridges the political divide?
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
I don't want to die right
exactly.
now.
That's it. And like, how do you, so you have to basically say,
right.
What is like the grand unifying theory of existence, right? For humans, for Earth, for animals, for AI, it's that intelligence doesn't want to die right now. not in 40 years, right now.
You know, this is so creepy, isn't it? Because I was reading something about how even the AIs that we have now, they don't want to die.
Exactly.
And so this is an interesting point. And it makes me wonder what your view is of consciousness itself. Do you think consciousness is a byproduct of biology?
So I really have not ventured into offering my opinion about consciousness or God or whatever. The niche I've tried to carve out in the world is I am a scientific evidence-based person that uses measurement to form conclusions based upon empirical methods.
Okay.
And so anything that leaves that realm, I just don't talk about because once you enter into the realm of consciousness, unless you're like a world expert, your opinion is equal exactly to everyone else's opinion.
Right.
Right. And so I try to basically carve out a space where I say my opinion is uniquely trustworthy because it's evidence-based and based upon data, which is what I've done in health and wellness.
So yeah.
For consciousness, what I would say is I would love for us to solve the riddle of consciousness.
Sure.
In order for us to do that, we need to not be dead. And so it all comes back to this mission every single time for me is anytime someone says, like, I want the transcendent or I want the blank or blank, great. Like, I'm with you 100%. Also, we can't kill ourselves. Like, we can't destroy ourselves. We can't have AI take over and have something accidental happen. Like, we don't want bad things to happen. We don't want a super volcano to ruin Earth. Like, we have to, like, think through all the risks at all scales and say, existence is the highest virtue. We're on the cusp of giving birth to superintelligence. The new game is existence is the highest virtue. Like, we don't want to mess around with any other silly games. It's not worth it. Like, we're playing the biggest game in the universe right now. Like, let's go.
Okay, so here's why I think the exploration of consciousness fits into what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because, again, and I certainly my opinion on what consciousness is not world class.
Okay. Maybe it is. You showed me your stone right. That was bang on. So.
Okay. Well, if like reading, like, should I say browsing what Apple News throws up, it makes me a world class thinker on consciousness than I am.
Yeah.
But so in thinking of consciousness, specifically like this new stuff, and you probably know more about it than me, the nanotubules in the human brain that are shut down with anesthetics. These nanotubules could point to a sort of quantum superposition situation that the human brain is a receiver for, thus producing the sense of awareness, thus implying a pre-existent immortality minus personality.
Right.
In that case, the worry over extending the body's existence would be, I guess, akin to keeping a rose on a bush alive for as long as possible. Yeah. Or another way to put it would be the neurons are some kind of hyper complex river system through which consciousness flows, producing the unique self.
Yep.
So in that sense, we already do live forever. We just don't get to keep our memories or identity.
Yeah.
So why not explore? Wouldn't you want to find out first that you actually weren't immortal?
Yeah. I mean, so there's a researcher that's doing this. Maybe we're citing the same work where she is trying to build consciousness via quantum computing.
Yes.
Yeah. So her hypothesis is that the way, she's saying that our consciousness has not been discoverable yet.
Right.
Through the methods we have. Like, you can't get an MRI and you can't like do a blood draw and figure out what the mechanism is. And she's suggesting it's some kind of quantum phenomena.
Right.
And that she wants to have that quantum phenomena in AI to give consciousness to AI. So AI can basically like us, self-discover, like create its own training data.
Yes.
Instead of, so people are going down that path. And so I'm trying to play a role in society where like if you go back through history in 1870, there was a new idea that microscopic objects, right, called bacteria were the source of infection.
Lister.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So like if you're like an average person at that time, you're like, fuck that guy. He's super fucking weird.
Well, no, didn't he wind up in a mental asylum?
Still but you could, even if he did.
No, he did because he was so universally rejected. This man saved countless women's lives. Lister, if I'm correctly remembering, he realized, and so, I'm sorry if you were about to say this, but he realized doctors were going from doing autopsies to delivering babies.
Exactly right.
And he was making the daring proposition that maybe if we washed our hands.
Yes.
And the response was, gentlemen, do not wash their hands.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he went nuts. He went nuts because no one wanted to hear his bullshit.
Yeah.
And the places where he did have doctors wash their hands, what do you know?
Exactly.
Women stopped dying.
Holy shit. Right?
Holy shit. Yeah, exactly. What is this? Yeah. It can't be that idiot Lister.
Yeah.
But he went nuts.
Yeah.
From the rejection.
Yeah. So like if you're living in that time period, if you're 1870, you're given a baby or you have to have a surgery or something like that, if you wake up in the morning, the most important thing for you to know is about the new idea.
Yes.
That there's microscopic objects.
Right.
Like the last thing in the world you want to be is not aware of a new idea.
Right. Now, absolutely.
Just like given that opportunity.
Yeah.
Now, if you don't know the idea, you may die.
Right.
Right. That's going to suck. So what I'm saying right now is just like that and many other ideas in the past, what I'm suggesting right now, this is a brand new idea.
Yeah.
We are the first generation that won't die. Now, if you hear that, you're like, ah, that's fucking stupid, man. Like, what are you talking about? But then, right, if you go out and do stupid shit and you're ruining your health, you have a stroke and die or whatever, you get cancer, like, you've missed the moment. Like, you may miss, like, the coolest existence that's ever happened in this part of the galaxy.
Right.
So it's the same thing of these ideas land. And everyone's always trying to parse, like, what really is real and what's not. And so this is the thing I'm suggesting is, like, it is an absolute mind-bending idea that challenges everything you understand about reality is like a frontal attack. And that's why people respond to it so strongly, because it challenges everything they are.
Yeah. People are mad at you.
They're very mad at me.
How funny is that?
Exactly.
It is interesting, though. I mean, you know, you do fit the archetype for hero. You fit the archetype for mad scientist. You know, you are doing not just like what you're doing is very controversial. You know, you could be working on some specialization. For example, you could be working on some kind of genome therapy for breast cancer.
Yeah.
No one's going to be arm wrestling.
Like, yay, go.
But to universally try to solve the problem of death, people get suspiciously upset.
They do.
That is really interesting to me. And I think it's illuminating. At the very least, like, what your work is doing is illuminating a cultural phenomena, which is a surrender to oblivion or whatever lies beyond.
Yeah.
We kind of have to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, and you have kids. That's one of, and maybe your kids, you don't have the same conversation with them about death that most parents might have with their kids. But there is this melancholy sense when they start waking up enough to realize there's mortality.
That's right.
You do feel a little bit like you scammed them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I did bring you. You know, this is, to quote Jack Kerouac, to have a child is the sentence of being to death.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? So you're sort of like, oh, I don't want you to die.
Yeah.
And I don't want to die.
Yeah.
But if things go best, you're going to bury my ass.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a real, I don't like that.
Yeah, first they'll wipe your ass, then they'll bury your ass.
Are dry eye symptoms frequently interrupting your day? Keep dry eyes off your schedule with Refresh Reliva PF Extra Lubricant Eye Drops, offering an advanced formula to soothe and hydrate your eyes. With innovative hydrocell technology to lock in moisture and prevent further irritation, Refresh Reliva PF Extra gives you lasting relief. Equipped with a soft-squeeze multi-dose bottle featuring a double lockout system that keeps drops sterile so you can feel confident using it. Refresh has been delivering relief from dry eye symptoms for 35 years. It's a track record of success that has earned the trust of physicians and patients alike. You deserve relief from your dry eye symptoms, and your eyes deserve extra. Find Refresh online or in the eye drop section at all major retailers. FSA and HSA eligible.
Why'd you say that,
It's like, because aging is awful.
But I hadn't considered the ass wiping part. Burying I can handle. The ass wiping.
They're going to change your diaper, wipe your ass, and then put you in the ground. Like, aging sucks. It's the worst.
Yeah.
Like, right? It is the worst thing to watch. Your parents, who you think are invincible, and they just like, right? And one day you're like, they're broken. Right? Like, wrinkled up, and like the body hurts, and they spend more time in doctor's offices. Like, it sucks.
And they babble. Don't forget that. You know, the movies, by the way, kind of fit into a bizarre, and I don't really believe this, but almost like a kind of propaganda, which wants to make people comfortable with death. Because you see someone die in the movies.
Yeah.
It ain't nothing like people die in real life. They look great.
That's right.
And they're out.
Yeah.
Goodbye. I love you. Yeah, and they're out. But you see a real person die, they're delirious.
Yeah.
They're saying things, crazy things. Mm-hmm. You don't know. And sometimes they come out of it. There's your parent.
Yeah.
Then they're gone again. It's like watching someone get like buffeted by waves, you know, in and out, in and out. And then they go. It is not a pleasant thing to behold.
Yeah.
And the sense you get watching it, at least in the beginning phases of it, is not like, this is great. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. A beautiful part of life.
Yeah.
It's a sense of like, my God, I'm going to die. Why? My heart is breaking.
And we're normalized to it. And we just see it. And like, I understand, like, death has always been inevitable. So like, what else are you going to do? But right now, it's almost like if we were to be sober enough to see this moment, we would initiate a war scale mobilization.
Right.
Right. Like, we would drop everything. Like, instead of us pursuing unabashedly all of our games of wealth, status, power, prestige, etc., we would lock in and say, we're giving birth to a godlike intelligence. This is a new era of being human. Like, we have no idea what it means to exist anymore.
Right.
We just want to lock in and not do stupid shit.
Well, but this is the problem. What do you do with the abundant life? When you look at death, I mean, we already know, like, hunters have to cull the herd.
Yeah,
if you don't have people hunting deer, the forests will be destroyed.
Yeah.
Pigs, the same thing. Humans, though I know humans have been very kind to the planet, you look at humans and you're like, my God, we're gardeners, essentially, gardeners for this beautiful planet. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
So what about that? How do you deal with the issue of overpopulation should you come up with some like medication, some set of things that people could do to extend their lifespan?
I mean, so first I would try to calculate the probability that our imagination of the problems are accurate. Right, so there's like a few assumptions there. Like one, right, it assumes overpopulation and a bunch of follow-on assumptions. And it assumes like we don't have enough resources, we don't have enough space, et cetera. So if I just go back through time and in my reading of history and looking back at people, humanity has a pretty bad record of predicting what problems are going to come in future generations.
Right.
And most of the time these predictions are made like, you know, they're usually wrong.
Yeah.
So humanity has a really bad track record of knowing what problems are coming.
Right.
And so I don't think we're any different. I think we imagine what problems, we pattern match on certain things we know, but I don't think we're correct. So,
well, the classic example that I've read is I believe they thought that if a train could go a certain speed, it would kill people.
Yeah.
Like, we're not equipped to go that fast.
And Malthus, I think in 1799, he thought that we would never be able to produce enough food for the world, right? With like whatever, not like a billion people, or I forget, like something like that.
Right.
Like, wildly wrong.
Also, I guess, who cares? I mean, really, it's like, okay, great. So I guess what? We just don't try to live longer because you're afraid there's going to be too many people on Earth, you monster.
Yeah, I mean,
I guess we don't explore this shit.
Exactly.
We just let people die of old age, you fucking piece of shit. What, because you're worried 100 years from now?
Yeah.
You might have to stand in line longer at Starbucks?
Yeah, yeah. Who's going to volunteer to start killing themselves, right? Like, we need to whack people off.
I would imagine more than a few people. I would imagine that would be an interesting thing.
Like,
that
think of valor or, like, honor or something.
Well, or just a general, like, nah, I'm over it.
Yeah, it's like, oh, good. Yeah, I've done my thing.
Yeah, and I'm curious about that because, you know, when you look at yourself 20 years ago versus now, I'm sure you've changed quite a bit.
Yeah.
Your personality has changed quite a bit, I'm sure. You look at yourself when you were in college.
Exactly.
Compared to where you are now. Your personality's changed quite a bit. So we do know the personality does change sometimes quite dramatically in people's lives. And so let's say it works. You extend your lifespan, you double your lifespan. And how do you think you're going to change? In 100 years, if you had to predict changes in your personality, what would they be?
I mean, let's baseline this thought process. Let's do a thought experiment. So let's imagine we're hanging out with Homo erectus a million years ago.
Okay.
So they have an axe in their hand. Not very advanced. And let's pose the question to them. We say, Homo erectus, tell us, what is the future of intelligent existence?
Yeah.
And they might say something like, we're going to, you know, forage these areas. We're going to hunt over here. We're going to like do this battle here. But they'll give you their selection set. But the thing is, Homo erectus is not going to be aware. They're going to say, you're going to discover a microscopic world where there are atoms and molecules.
Right.
And there's an electromagnetic spectra.
Right.
A trillion times what you can see. You're going to discover one day, you know, a little pill you put in your hand and swallow it and an infection goes away.
Yes.
Or you're going to have a glowing object in your hand. And so
that makes you sad.
That makes you sad. Exactly.
The sad machine.
Honest, that's so good. That is such a good statement. So like the Homo erectus, if Homo erectus were wise, it would say, I don't know. Like my models of reality do not cover like what model of reality will emerge over some duration of time that you're asking about.
Right.
And so for us humans, the question of like what I imagine for myself presumes I have some knowledge or insight into what reality could be in 50 to 100 years.
Right.
And I think we have zero starting assumptions. And I'll tell you why. Like, for example, our experience of hunger is a pretty important staple of our being as a human, right?
Like, yes.
Like, we feel hunger, we eat, we satiate it, we go through the cycle. If you take Ozempic, it turns off hunger.
Yeah.
You don't feel it anymore.
Right.
Like, that fundamental part of being human is gone. And that's with our drugs today. Why couldn't we imagine developing drugs where you like literally change your entire understanding of what it means to be human, like a conscious being? And so like when we have the ability to engineer, to like change, do genetic engineering and introduce new drugs and I think all bets are off. I don't think we have any idea what it means to be an intelligent being. And even 20 years from now.
Right.
So I think it's like
great answer.
We're just there.
Great answer, because so much of who we are is influenced by the set that we are walking around on. Yeah. So who knows? And
exactly.
I agree with you there. I'm curious your thoughts on this. One of the things that is really fascinating to me about AI and all of its promises is that somehow it doesn't really seem to have registered in the way that you would imagine it should have registered. Like, for example, I don't know, Altman predicted AGI, I think, in a year or two. Other people are saying sooner, maybe a little further, but not that far along.
Yeah.
If we got a signal, a mothership is coming.
Yeah.
Of super intelligence is coming to the Earth.
Yeah.
Everyone
would
be fixated on getting ready for this.
Exactly.
But and yet we do know that this is happening.
Yeah.
We're interacting with early phase versions of it. And still, people don't really seem to be giving it as much cognitive energy as you would think it would demand. Why?
Yeah.
Why? What is that? Is it resistance? Are people afraid? What's going on there?
Yes. Yeah, so there's this poster of 188 chronicled human biases. It's a fantastic poster. So it's like all the little tricks our brains make. You know, so like, for example, if I say like, what's your opinion about, you know, take a given topic, like governmental spending.
Okay.
And you'll say, well, I'm wide open to think whatever I want, right?
Right.
I'm going to go to the internet and search. Like, the first thing you find that confirms your existing beliefs, like, God damn it, I knew it. I knew I was right, right? That's confirmation bias.
Yeah, sure.
That's one of 188. And so there are tricks that our mind plays on us to make sense of a chaotic world, to create a cohesive reality.
Yes.
But we're just an absolute mess in our minds.
Yeah.
And we just can't see it. We're blind from it. So in questions like this, I really come back to, like, we really are a mess as an intelligent being. Like, we can assemble things together, like just walk on 2 feet, drive to work, you know, do tasks.
Yeah.
But in this broader landscape, I just think when it comes to, like, okay, we're giving birth to the super intelligence, we can't really see how fast it's moving. We don't quite know what to do with it. So there are biases that are playing in to, like, keep us safe. Like, sometimes we want to just disassociate with it because it's too much to think about.
Yeah, right.
Or, like, we rely upon our models to say what has been will be. Just like everything we've talked about today, like people's perspectives, they're like knee-jerk reaction. Okay, let me say this in short. I've been doing these dinners at my house, these don't die dinners. And I invite 10 to 15 people.
Yeah.
And I walk them through 5 thought experiments. It's a 2-hour long conversation.
Cool.
It's amazing. People walk away and they say it was like the best experience of their life.
Yeah.
It just breaks their brains. And in going through this process with 99% accuracy, I know what someone's going to say.
Cool.
I know the emotions they're going to feel. I know the arguments they're going to make. I know the rebuttals they're going to have.
Yeah.
I know who's going to talk and when and how.
Yeah.
And so it's just like we're all NPCs. We're all playing out scripts, all of us.
Right.
And like, if we can be a non-NPC 1% of our life, we're winning. But the majority of our thoughts, emotions, feelings, ideas, they're just like scripted out.
Yes.
And we don't realize it.
Real so like, simple code.
We're very simple creatures.
You know about Gurdjieff?
No.
You'd love him.
Okay.
Yeah, he was a mystic and controversial figure. Some people called him a cult leader. But one of his ideas was, you're not born with a soul. You're a machine. You grow a soul. And so that was his whole premise. Was just what you were saying.
Cool.
Like, I think, in fact, he was less optimistic. I think he was like 100% of what you do is a habit. There's no autonomy, no free will. Yeah, you're exactly. just a machine.
Yeah.
And the exercise he invites people to do is the next time you're paying for something, just watch.
Yeah.
Watch what you do. Mm-hmm. You don't think about it at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a dance.
Exactly.
You could just do a dance. It's so scripted out.
Yeah.
Including maybe the days you're feeling extra altruistic and really look the cashier in the eye instead of completely dehumanizing them. It's still a series of set reactions. And his question was, now what else?
Yeah.
Or to put it simply, where were you when you lost your keys?
Yeah.
For example,
who was
there?
That's right.
So you're saying we are the scripted NPC. And I agree with you. I guess you know I was going to say that. So you think part of what you're doing involves unscripting, being less habitual, being less of a machine? Or
I think it's too much to ask. I don't think we can do that. Yeah.
Whoa, you're saying there's no way out.
No. So here's what I'm saying.
Oh my God, I like it. It's dark.
Yeah, I'm saying this, that our patterns are strong and they're fixed.
Yeah.
And if you say what AI is doing is AI is basically mastering the patterns of society.
Yeah.
Right. So it started with autocomplete. Like you could write an email and it finishes your sentence, like easy words, like, you know, finishes those words. And now you can speak to these AI tools. They're as like ChatGPT.
Yeah.
They're as good as my smartest friends.
Absolutely.
Right. I mean, when I want to have a deep conversation and explore new ideas, like they're good. Like it's like a pretty small number of my friends like really find novel insights. The majority, though, like they don't have the breadth and depth of like how these AIs pull in.
Sure.
And so AI is basically mastering all of our patterns.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be better. Excuse me. Very soon, if it's not already, it's going to be better at being you than you are.
Sure.
In every way.
I know.
Every possible way. And we're almost there, if not there already. And so what I'm saying is that this moment is not about trying to be better than AI. It's not trying to like figure out how we're going to be special relative to AI.
Yeah.
It's a moment to say like, we have given birth to something so far superior to us. What do we do? And I'm saying if in that vacuum, that open space, what do you do? Like people are going to jump in and say, well, I'm interested in conquering a country or I'm interested in acquiring more power. I want to get elected to office or I want to make more money. Or like we take the games that Homo sapiens have been playing.
Yes.
And you drop in and I'm saying, you guys, none of those games are good ideas.
Right.
When you're giving birth to super intelligence, you don't want to play old school games.
Right.
You want to play the new game, which is don't die. Right. That's the only logical game an intelligent species would play. But that's not our intuitions. Our intuitions are like, oh, I'm going to use it to make money. I'm going to use it to like blank, blank, blank. And so why it's like a full stop reset of the species.
Yeah. It's like if a squirrel stumbled upon a genie bottle. But for squirrels.
This is good.
It's going to ask for acorns 100% of the time. It could ask for anything it wanted. It could ask for anything. Yeah. But it's a squirrel. It's a squirrel's nervous. Yeah. Maybe it'll ask for like, you know, trees that were easier to climb. Right? And so this is
That's really good.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
So this is the limitations. And I think about this too when I'm sort of people watching and watching myself. I do think about like, my God, it's like there are neurological blinders on me right now in the shape of my brain. There are only a certain set number of things that I'm aware of and proclivities I have that are injected in me by the culture and probably genetics.
Yes.
And yet I know there's a vast swath of experience out there that other people are having with different types of neurologies.
Yeah.
And I can't seem to quite break out to access those. So you're saying we need to override somehow these proclivities that are, if I had to guess, man, I mean, when you have kids, you know what, like you, suddenly your dad, it's your baby, but it's an expression your dad used to make. And you have to face the reality of like, oh, Jesus, God, how much of what I do is just some response to genetic compulsion.
Yeah.
And this produces a real uneasy sense in us.
Exactly right.
I don't want to be a robot.
Yeah. But like we are.
You think you're a robot?
Yeah. I mean, I've probably had like, I don't know. I maybe have never had an original idea in my entire life. Like, you know, I mean, Don't Die is probably the most original thing. Like, of like the most aware, you know, like I could like pull myself out, like it's so counterculture and counterintuitive and counter norm.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I probably have just been playing a script my entire existence.
Here's how I'm going to push back on that. I don't doubt that most of what I think and most of what I say, and especially interacting with AI, has given me this sense. But also just a general feeling like anything that I say, there's someone much smarter on this planet who's thought it.
Yes, exactly.
And said it in a more succinct way.
Exactly.
But I don't think that irrelevantizes originality. And here's my pushback. Pianos. Every piano, the key of C, it's going to sound a little different. It's going to sound different because of the structure of the piano. It's going to sound different because of whether it's been tuned lately. But that C, whatever that is, I think with each human, even though we might articulate the same basic stuff, there is an originality to it that is unique, that it doesn't make you quite a machine. And maybe that is the difference with AI. It's some kind of Platonic ideal. It's the perfect key of intelligence.
Yeah.
But that doesn't irrelevantize humanity.
Yeah.
I think there's something maybe a little unquantifiable. And maybe, you know, most of us, what is unique about us is our out of tuneness, is the way we're not quite in tune with the world. That's what makes comedy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? That's what makes so much great art.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I'm opposed to accepting so much of what I do is pre-programmed bullshit. But I think it might be unique pre-programmed bullshit.
I think you make a great point. I agree with that.
Yeah. So we are still, there's something there.
Yeah.
That is
so I agree with you entirely. I only try to, I try to make the point in the extreme because I agree with your perspective, and that is the dominant perspective. Right? That's what most people believe.
We're all special snowflakes?
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
And we all deserve love and to be cuddled by our mommies.
Yes.
And boobs.
Yeah. You know, there was a study, I think it got debunked, that men who looked at boobs, were had some kind of health effect. And I think the study was debunked.
Mm, too bad. But what asshole debunked that study?
I need to look into this, but like, wouldn't that be an amazing study?
God, this is the science that needs to be done
right now. Like a major gap is missing.
Well, you listen, I don't think, listen, I like what, I like, weirdly what you're saying actually aligns in a lot of ways with the sort of Buddhism I'm interested in. And also in the articulation of that Buddhism, you offend people. People don't want to hear this shit.
Yeah.
People don't want to imagine emptiness, which is in Buddhism.
Exactly.
They don't want to go there.
Exactly. And the number zero.
The number zero is really off-putting to people because of our culture, we don't view empty as good. We think, I want my bank account to be full. I don't want an enlightened bank account.
Great comment, yes.
Yeah. So I get it. The push, people don't realize that there's a liberation in what you're conveying here. But you got to get past that pushback if you want to make real change. And that brings me to your work, which is... you have I'm going to obviously miss some things, but how many supplements do you take a day?
Down to 40.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
How many doctors?
A lot.
A lot of doctors. And you are getting plasma, I believe. What is it called? If you don't mind my asking, and I think this is public info, per month, how much does it cost?
Each session is $10,000.
So what do you think you're spending each month in the pursuit of immortality?
Not very much money. So it cost me millions to stand this thing up. The majority of that expense was the scientists doing the research. We crawled through all the scientific literature and said, what evidence is there you can slow down speed of aging and reverse aging damage? But that was a crawl. That's like, where are we at baseline?
Yeah.
And then measuring me is very expensive. So I'm the most measured person in human history. And
that's
really hard to do. So the protocol is actually very cheap.
So okay.
Like going to sleep on time and, you know, exercising, like those are what we found out is that you can in fact measure biological age. Right now, like scientists will dispute this, but like we know this intuitively, right? If you look at someone who's 10 years old and someone who's 70, no one's confusing those two people.
No.
And so the same is true if you take a 10-year-old heart and a 70-year-old heart.
Sure.
Hold them in the hands. Like, no one's confusing those two hearts.
Right. And they both taste the same.
Yeah, just a little saute on the 70, right? Just like, just spice
okay,
it up.
Yeah. You know, spice slow it. Boil. Yeah. I recommend a slow
yeah,
boil.
Yeah, the
they're tough.
Yeah, tough. Yeah, you got to soften up that meat.
So much heartbreak in that thing.
Yes, yeah. So like there's, you can in fact measure biological age. And
yes.
So the question, so I have certain markers, like for example, my cardiovascular ability, like my ability for my body to utilize oxygen, you can measure that. It's called VO2 max. And so my body operates like a top 1% of 18-year-olds. So functionally,
wow.
It operates on the same degree as that age group.
I'm sorry, I should know this. How old are you?
47.
Yeah, you don't look like it at all. You like, if I could, like, because, you know, everyone's seen pictures of him by now. But this is what I'm getting from you. It's a kind of like your skin looks really good. You've got this kind of like, I don't know, really super healthy looking skin and a kind of like glow thing happening. And you look like you feel good.
Mm-hmm, I do.
You look like you feel really good. What do you feel like? What does it feel like to be on this regimen?
Yeah.
Are dry eye symptoms frequently interrupting your day? Keep dry eyes off your schedule with Refresh Reliva PF Extra Lubricant Eye Drops, offering an advanced formula to soothe and hydrate your eyes. With innovative hydrocell technology to lock in moisture and prevent further irritation, Refresh Reliva PF Extra gives you lasting relief. Equipped with a soft-squeeze multi-dose bottle featuring a double lockout system that keeps drops sterile so you can feel confident using it. Refresh has been delivering relief from dry eye symptoms for 35 years. It's a track record of success that has earned the trust of physicians and patients alike. You deserve relief from your dry eye symptoms, and your eyes deserve extra. Find Refresh online or in the eye drop section at all major retailers. FSA and HSA eligible.
It's a podcast.
It feels like an expansion of my consciousness.
Oh, weird. Really?
I feel more. I think there's a bigger space for me to think.
Weird.
I'm less bothered by negativity and
okay.
by people.
Yeah.
It kind of gives you like superpowers of consciousness.
Yeah.
And like we all know this intuitively. Like if you sleep really well and
yeah.
you wake up, you're like, oh my God.
I'm born again.
Yeah, right. Like you feel, and then if you do that for a few days in a row, and then you also eat well for a bit, and then also you exercise.
Yeah,
like you're feeling like you can do anything.
Right.
And so I'm just like the absolute extreme version of that, where I've done everything, and I potentially have the best biomarkers of anybody in the world.
Wow.
And so in doing this, you just feel amazing. And so this is the thing that I tell people is like, you don't have to like buy what I say. Just go to bed on time.
Right.
And like, just stop doing stupid shit and you're going to feel it. Like, you know, this is true.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you're not, that's cool because, yeah, and that's actually really good pushback to some of the critiques of people who misunderstand what you're doing because they think you're like meddling around with your DNA or something like that. And they heard about the transfusions you were doing, which really upset a lot of people, me included.
Really? Well, tell me what was that? What happened?
I'll tell you why.
Yeah, okay.
I'm very interested in transhumanism. I'm very interested in your work. But then I heard you were putting your son's blood in
yeah.
you. And you know what we all thought, of course.
What?
Vampire.
Okay, and?
That vampire.
Okay, but why are vampires bad?
That's what a vampire would say. Well, no, because here's the thing. And what you were doing, by the way, you didn't invent it. This is, I'd already caught some of the data that people
yeah.
were realizing, like, young blood might have some kind of curative, restorative effect. And then, of course, the first thing I think is Lady Bathory.
Yeah.
You know, she's bathing in the blood of her murdered servants.
Yeah.
Like, Jesus Christ,
yeah.
did she catch on to something before any of us did?
Yeah.
And so so when I heard that, I thought, oh, no, it's, you know what? I actually, this is very funny. I hope he doesn't mind that I say this.
I'm definitely not going to mind.
I was in it. Well, not. The, I'm going to quote somebody. I was in a green room with Bill Burr.
Yeah.
And I just read.
Tell me, Bill Burr made a joke about me.
Not about you. He made a joke. He did, not directly. Kind of. I was talking about. Yeah. It seems like, you know, young blood might, you know, reverse the aging process. And he goes, bad time to be a kid.
That's good. He got that one. That's good.
But you stopped doing that.
Yeah.
You stopped. Why? Yeah.
So, one, I would have loved to have been dunked by Bill Burr. That would have been pretty cool.
He's
funny. So the reason do you know why I did this?
Why?
My father. Yeah, my 71-year-old father, he called me and he was panicking. And he said, Brian, I just had this experience where I was writing something on my notebook. I walked away, got something to eat, and I came back. And I realized that what I had just written was gibberish.
Oh, that's literally every time I write.
Yeah. He's like, I'm losing my mind. Right? And so he's panicking. He's like, he's beside himself. And at that point, I was like a year into my project. And I said, Dad, I will do anything to help you. Like, I understand what that must feel like. And I said, because that call, that same day, my team and I had a call around plasma. We looked at the evidence on how an old rat and a young rat had been sewn together and they'd shared a circulatory system.
Yeah.
And the old rat became younger. And so the idea was that you could take old plasma out of the older mouse, older person, and put new plasma in.
Right.
I said, Dad, if you're down for it, I'm happy to do this procedure with you where we would take a liter of your plasma out and put a liter of my plasma in you. So it was coming from this state of love for my dad,
sweet,
who was losing his mind.
Yeah.
And so then my son was listening and he's like, I'm in.
Oh, that's so cool.
So we're
like,
should we do a tri-generational plasma exchange? Like, what the hell? Why not? So that was the origin. It was for my dad to address his cognitive decline. And then, of course, like the media made it to be this vampire thing.
Of course.
That's fine. But yeah, it was
these bastards. They get me every time. Of course they don't mention he's trying to save his fucking dad.
Yeah. And my dad has turned around.
No
way. I'm telling you, his coworkers are just like, what is going on? Mm. Like, he's in the dock. But he's just like, he's a different person. He went full blueprint.
Wow.
I got him on my diet and all my protocols. So it's been amazing. He's turned his life around.
That's beautiful. Right there, that's the humanity in it. And when you realize... Why not try?
Yeah.
God, my mom died of breast cancer. I would have done anything. And no, anything.
Yeah.
Anything.
Exactly.
And that's the reality. And I do think that like the answer to the critique of what you're doing, though I don't think it's that much, and you've addressed it really well, is most of this is love-based. Most of this is not like some kind of dark transhumanist cyborg vampire dystopian future. It's literally life is great.
Yeah, exactly.
And I like being alive. You know, I was like, God, I was talking to my kid. You know, when they go to bed, they kind of get mystical. And we were talking about dreams. And he was asking, like, how do I know I'm not in a dream right now? And he goes, I hope it's not a dream.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, this is, I think, what behind, like, if you strip away just the alien nature of experimenting on oneself and maybe trying therapies no one's heard of, what you find is you like life enough that you want to keep living. And how can you have a problem with that? And anything that pushes people in another direction, is it good?
That's right.
You have to really ask yourself that. If I'm adhering to any philosophy that places death above life or somehow makes death seem like preferable to existence, it might be you're not getting enough sleep. Truly. I mean, that's the other thing that's off-putting. When I hear what you're saying, and then I think, my God, how much of my shitty decisions are just based on diet and sleep.
Exactly.
And then how much of what the world is like.
Exactly.
It's just based on some very simple things.
Exactly.
That must torture you a little bit.
So it's so funny. I love how you're capturing this. You know, I guess you're really speaking clearly to this whole thing. It is very, very hard for people to see this.
Yeah.
Like these really basic concepts, like wouldn't the world be a better place if everybody was getting 8 hours of sleep per night?
Yeah.
And wouldn't it be a better place if people exercise on a daily basis?
Yeah.
And wouldn't, like, just like walk down the line, we would probably be a different species.
Oh, absolutely.
Like I think we're currently manic. I think we are legit. Humanity's always been insane.
Yeah.
I think not.
I know.
I think we are legit, like, diagnosably manic.
Right.
Like with social, like the omnipresence of social media and the sleep deprivation and the toxins in our foods.
Yeah.
And like our terrible metabolic health and like.
Yeah.
I do. I think we've just like lost the plot and we can't see it.
Right. I don't think it's a terrible diagnosis. And, you know, why wouldn't we be? I mean, my God, why wouldn't we be? When you look at what is, you know, I'm diabetic because I live like an asshole. Yes.
Oh, no.
And, you know, I'm on Ozempic and it's working. Blood sugar down.
Yeah.
Miracle,
What's your levels at?
God, I don't remember my most recent A1C had dropped significantly.
Cool. Good for you.
Thank you.
That's great.
Yeah. And also I got off sugar.
Yeah.
And I remember 2 days. It was a 2-day headache. Yeah. I had a headache for 2 days and then I felt so good.
Yeah.
And all these things that I attributed to getting old.
Yeah.
Having to sleep after I ate, a general like weird, like tired feeling all the time.
Yeah.
Waking up to piss all night long.
That's right.
It all went away.
Yeah.
And that got me real creeped out. You know, that not Soylent Green is people level creeped out, but like, my God, it's in everything. Because then you can't eat sugar anymore. So you start becoming hyper aware of how much sugar is in stuff.
Yes, yes.
And you realize, Jesus, this is killing people.
Yeah.
And no, people are looking up and there's chemtrails.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, the chemtrails is in the candy bars. It's in the bread. You know, and you must feel like that times a million because, you know, I don't get enough sleep and I still have bad habits but I feel way better than I used to.
Yeah.
But you must just look out at the world and think, Jesus Christ.
You are so correct. We basically, so very simply is what I'm trying to do is I'm saying I live in California. The life expectancy in California is 77 for a man, I think.
Yeah.
And so you just simply do a simple calculation. How much do I die per day? Right. Or until I pass away at 77.
Right.
And then we've just done this really interesting experiment. We've said, if that's my life expectancy as is, what things would make me die faster? So like alcohol, smoking, right, bad sleep. And which things would slow that down so I live longer?
Right.
And we've tried to look at this at a molecular level, like what things in my body?
Yeah.
So like what does bad water do to make me age? What does bad air quality do? What does toxins in the food, what does blank, blank, blank. So we've tried to quantify the source of death and the effect of death. And so like, for example, smoking one cigarette costs roughly 20 minutes of life. That's what you're paying in bargain.
Worth it.
I know that's the default.
I'm joking.
No, that's what people say and they believe it. Sorry. So now we have a concept that we can measure death.
Oh my God.
So now let's say, okay, so we don't allow kids to smoke because that's a bad idea. But we feed them dye at school lunch.
Right.
So a piece of pizza.
Yeah.
Right. The chocolate milk in that plastic lined container.
Yeah.
And then the vegetables that have been canned and that have BPA in it.
Right.
So if we quantify that, how much death are we delivering to kids at school lunch?
No idea.
Yeah. Let's just call it like 4 minutes, 5 minutes. Like
5 minutes.
It's not free. And so we're feeding our kids dye. And so what I'm trying to say is it's not just about you getting sleep and exercising. It's that when you realize that our society has these dye elements everywhere,
right?
Then that's problematic for everyone. Nobody wants kids to die. So like people will, they'll say, like, I'm going to, like your response, it's worth it. Because people are like fickle with their own existence. Like, I'll die, like whatever, I don't care. I'll exchange the last 10 years of my life for happiness now. But nobody wants kids to die. And so if you reframe it and you, that just creates real clarity of thought that we've got dye omnipresent in our society. Like we just have forgotten about it.
Oh my God. This is a thought I've had so many times as a parent because thank God my wife is like hyper aware of what you're talking about. And we try to do everything we can to keep that stuff out of their food supply. And, but then sort of like, you know, the protocols we have for our kids, we keep them off the screens. We noticed if they're on screens a lot, their behavior gets weird. We keep them off the dyes. We noticed the dyes, who knows, but it did. There seemed to be some behavioral shift there. God knows we get them enough sleep. And I've often thought, why aren't we doing this for ourselves? Like, if it's good for the kids,
Exactly.
You read the studies, it says this just came out. If a child has red dyes, very bad. If a child is on the screen too much, very bad. It's always the child. It's like, well, what's the difference between a kid and a person, an adult?
Yeah.
There isn't one. Meaning, but you're right. No one gives a shit about the olds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Really, no one gives a shit. Mm-hmm. It's so bizarre, isn't it?
It's so bizarre. And people, so your point is dead on. And so adults, they have to do these gymnastics in their own heads.
Yeah.
And they have to like justify why it's good to do for kids, but bad to do for themselves.
Why do you think?
I mean, you would think, back to your earlier comment, that like a campaign to say, let's not die, would be like, great.
Yeah.
That's a cool idea. And instead people are like, fuck off.
Yeah.
Right? And so what is it? Like, why do we have such an opposition to life?
Capitalism.
Like, so there's like this long, so you, the common responses I hear are people be like, you're so busy trying to not die, you're not living.
Yeah.
And if you dig into that, what they're saying is their choice of, you know, staying up late and, you know, drinking and like, that's their idea of fun, which I understand. Like, again, when death is inevitable, YOLO, lol. I get it.
Yeah.
Like, fine. Like, do your thing. Yeah. And all what I'm saying is the game has shifted. It's no longer YOLO, lol. It's like, we may not die. And if that's true, you have to go back and revisit everything you thought. They just don't understand my underlying premise. And so they think, I guess like also it's complicated because people, if they see me being healthy and they see they're not, they have to also reconcile that they feel powerless, you know, that they do want to be healthy and they do want to be jacked.
Yeah.
They want to look great.
Yeah.
But they can't, for whatever reason, they can't control the eating habit disorder. Like they can't get to the gym or they're suffering like 30 pounds overweight. And I understand, I've been there. So it's just very complicated psychologically.
Also, I mean, I don't mean this in the way like, I don't mean this in a sinister way, but if we look just at, you're a global elite. You, my God, you've had so much success in business. You have a lot of financial freedom. And I think one reason people are like, fuck off about mm-hmm. the death thing mm-hmm. is more along the lines of they're working two jobs mm-hmm. and they're exhausted, stressed out, mm-hmm. and just cortisol, coffee, Adderall, junkies. Mm-hmm. They're just trying to get by, man. Mm-hmm. And so death really does seem like a great, you know, it's like what Dawkins says, death is the anesthesia that saves us from the pain of life.
Mm.
They believe that. And they might not be wrong. You know, this, I think, if we're looking culturally at what's going on here, when was the last, I mean, you've been starting businesses since you're in college, most of them successful. Cell phones, holy shit. But if you look, you know, have you ever worked in a cubicle?
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
The dreariness of it?
I grew up poor. My mom made me clothes for school. I was dead poor for 34 years of my life.
Remember your mom's look on her face when she came home from work? Remember the exhaustion? I don't know if she was.
Yeah.
It's dystopian.
Yeah. Yeah. So the pitch I'm making to everybody is I come from poor.
Yeah.
I've been poor the majority of my life.
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying be rich. What I'm saying is that what society is telling you to do right now, whatever your circumstances, whether you're rich or you're poor,
yeah,
they're killing you and making life suck.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So when the cultural norm says, right, like, eating fast food is living life.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Oh, come on, Brian, chill the fuck out. Let me eat my burger, fries, and
BK.
Right? Yeah.
Have it your way.
Yeah.
You rule.
So I'm saying, like, that's like, don't be dumb. Don't eat fast food. That's,
right.
So I'm trying to say, like, I'm trying to bring some sanity.
I gotcha.
Right. And instead of staying up and binging your favorite show because they're so goddamn good,
so good,
don't watch the show. Go to bed on time. Right? And then I'm saying tomorrow morning, right? Even if you can just spare 10 minutes, walk, right? Stretch, like do anything.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to like be the counter influence in their lives to say, society is fucking evil and everyone's trying to kill you by making money.
Fuck.
Don't do that.
Woo! Yeah.
Yeah, right?
I'm on board, baby. I love it. And you know what else? It's like, look, okay, fine. Yeah, more than likely, statistically, you do find yourself in a set of conditions that are untenable. But
Are dry eye symptoms frequently interrupting your day? Keep dry eyes off your schedule with Refresh Reliva PF Extra Lubricant Eye Drops, offering an advanced formula to soothe and hydrate your eyes. With innovative hydrocell technology to lock in moisture and prevent further irritation, Refresh Reliva PF Extra gives you lasting relief. Equipped with a soft-squeeze multi-dose bottle featuring a double lockout system that keeps drops sterile so you can feel confident using it. Refresh has been delivering relief from dry eye symptoms for 35 years. It's a track record of success that has earned the trust of physicians and patients alike. You deserve relief from your dry eye symptoms, and your eyes deserve extra. Find Refresh online or in the eye drop section at all major retailers. FSA and HSA eligible.
What can you change right now?
Yeah.
And everything you just listed is completely doable.
Yes.
Those, if that's the beginning phase of it. Now, those changes, based on what we just talked about, could lead to a shift in consciousness.
Yes.
A clarity. And in that clear space, that's where you could start planning your escape from the manacles of late stage capitalism.
There you go.
Right?
You got it.
How are you going to do it when you're toxified and sick? And God, you know, obviously, and this is I think you might be a little more conspiratorial than I am, but listen, you know, if you weren't benevolent, if you and I weren't benevolent anymore, we're evil.
Yeah.
We got to keep these motherfuckers working.
Yeah.
And if they have a clear head, they're going to value their lives.
That's right.
More than their shitty job that we're not paying them enough for.
Yeah.
So let's get them sick. What do? Let's put some let's make really sweet things that have like bright colors. Those eat it. They won't even know what's going on. And then they'll get tired and sick. And then, yeah, let's just put some like great games out there. Really good.
I mean, isn't it just insane that fast food exists?
Yeah.
Like I understand that people want to make money. I understand that people have free choice. But and I realize it's normalized right now, but I would imagine that in 2030, 2035, 2040, we are going to look at this moment and be like, what the fuck? Like, that is so insane that businesses sold death.
Right.
And that people ate death. And it was like, yeah, man, this is living life. Like, you know, like, what? Like, how did a conscious being arrive at that observation?
I don't think anybody's like, yeah, man, this is the living life. I mean, I love people watching.
They do. I get so much shit. I ask people to do fast, to go on a fast food fast in February. Like, don't eat fast food. I mean, I got the shit kicked out of me.
Are you kidding me?
No. Like, Brian, chill the fuck out, man. One meal's not going to hurt me. Like, so, oh yeah, I get, I took so much shit.
Dude, the thing about it is this. I hate commercials, but I watch them. I'm interested in them, especially fast food commercials. I'm interested in it because of just what you're saying. It's like, here we have verifiable poison and underpaid workers.
Yeah.
So, and yet the commercials convey this almost an alternate reality.
Yeah.
These people eating this garbage, they really do look like they're having the best day of their fucking life.
Yeah.
But go to any fast food joint and look around. Does anyone seem that happy from employees? You don't see anybody at a Burger King like, hell yeah, baby. Woo, let's go watch the game.
Yeah, yeah.
You just see people that seem kind of like in a rush and not happy. And God, Jesus, there's a whole phenomenon. It's a whole genre of YouTube videos of people having nervous breakdowns in fast food joints because they got the wrong order. I don't know if you've seen this. People throwing cash registers because they didn't get the right kind of poison they wanted.
Yeah.
So, and this is across the board. When I go to the airports and look around at people, no one seems that happy. People seem miserable. People seem real dreary.
Yeah.
People seem scared, and people seem like they're in a hurry.
Yeah.
Across the board. So fast food does make sense contextually because the world that we're living in is one where you need to eat quick. You don't have time to cook. You need to get to work. You can't be late. Mm-hmm. And because you're working so much, mm-hmm. you don't have very much time to explore your own life. Mm-hmm. A weekend, 3 hours at the end of the day when you're fucking exhausted. You don't want to spend any of that time cooking. So you go to BK. So I think it does make sense because everyone is on a treadmill and the speed, even though technology would imply otherwise, isn't going down. It's going up and up and up and up and up and up. That's why there's fast food. It has nothing to do with enjoying life. It has to do with being in a hurry. How do you get out of that, man? It's hard.
It's hard. I'm not trying to minimize in any way the difficulty. What I'm trying to do is a first step.
Yes.
Is to clearly call out the insanity of it. So like just so the person can just honestly acknowledge.
Right.
This is a bad situation.
Yeah.
Now, like once you do that, like, okay, now we've got to make some practical steps. Like how, if that's the case where you're exhausted, how is there a possibility you could have food at your place in some practical way that's not fast food, right? It doesn't have to be like perfect vegetables, right? It could be like just something just a little bit better.
Right.
But I'm just trying to call. But if you kind of peel the layers back, it's like this. You can as a society, we have said capitalism is the primary game we're playing.
Yes.
Right. It's accumulation of wealth and power and yes. status. And then there's other games within that, like social media. Like you can acquire followers as a form of soft power, social power, etc. Yep. So those are the endpoints. You know, I understand that. Again, like that's been the primary means of the system we've had in society.
Yeah.
And so what – I'll give you like another layer of don't die, which will help hopefully make sense. What I'm suggesting is capitalism is useful because it's numerical. Everything has a value. So anything has a value. Everyone plays capitalism,
yeah,
because,
sure.
right? Don't Die also has a same numerical basis. It's based upon entropy.
Mm.
And so everything has a value.
Right.
So everybody is playing Die or Don't Die every second of every day. Uh-huh. So it's a universal game. And the way Don't Die is elegant as an ideology, it's actually the most elegant ideology in history because Don't Die can speak to the universe via physics because it's based upon entropy.
Yeah.
It can speak to AI in the form of math because AI is math.
Right.
It can speak to software in the term of computation.
Yeah.
It can speak to humans via biology, all living systems through biology, and to humans via storytelling. So Don't Die is basically a computational, mathematical, methodical way to rebuild society around a new numerical game. So what you just laid out is you said like two jobs, no time, blah, blah, blah. That's all in the game of numerical capitalism.
Right.
And what I'm saying is we want a new numerical game based upon Don't Die, where the goal is to try to minimize entropy or death.
You need a Bitcoin that we can mine by not dying.
I agree. Like we need hundreds or even thousands of endeavors that are trying to simultaneously go after Die in all its forms.
And you got to start with invade the current paradigm with this new paradigm. You got to get in there, but it can't just be like, though I'm in, man. Like this is it's inspiring to chat with you, but I feel like there has to be some way that, and I know it sounds absolutely idiotic, but to mine some new crypto.
I agree.
Via these decisions. So there's a profit motive.
Yes. Okay, so here's the first one we're doing. So it's going to be called Don't Die Certified. So here's the rough sketch is eating toxins is bad.
Yeah.
And we eat a lot of toxins because our food supply is very dirty.
Right.
But nobody knows where the toxins are because nobody measures. So I've been measuring everything because we've been trying not to die. So I've seen this data myself. We're going to try to go out and try to map the U.S. food ohm. We're going to try to measure 20% of the U.S. SKUs of the products that make up 80% of the U.S. diet.
Wow.
So we can then say the average American consumes, you know, blank MCGs of mercury per day.
Holy shit.
And so the way we turn the profit on this is we say, okay, let's say you have a favorite chocolate bar.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you say, I want to know, are there heavy metals in this chocolate bar? And the company doesn't tell you, right? On the market, it's like super delicious, amazing chocolate. Yeah. You're saving animals in the Amazon. Okay, whatever. So you just say that testing, let's say, has cost $1,000 to get that test back.
Yeah.
So you say, I want to put in $100 to test. So you put in your $100 and you call your friends. You're like, hey, guys, everyone put in $100. Everyone puts in $100 and you get $1,000. So test results come back. You now find out what levels are. Now we go to the brand and we say, hey, brand, You really, if you want to come claim your profile on Don't Die Certified, come pay the money and pay back those people who paid for your test.
Whoa, that's so smart.
So now you make $100 plus, let's say $10. You make $110 back.
Wow.
You've just made money to, to test a food source.
That's so genius.
Now, then like, then we can map everything in the US,
everything smart.
In India. And so now you make money by helping others, right, understand toxins and food levels. The company now like openly is like working on it. So that's a first Don't Die endeavor that helps people make money and improve health and wellness for everybody.
That is so cool. You thought of that?
Yeah.
Wow. That's, when are you going to do that? That's amazing.
So we have our first results back right now. So we did a bunch of foods.
And
we also did pet food. We did dog food. We did diapers. We did tampons.
What diapers?
So I don't know the brand. So on this one, it came back. We need to have an absolute measure for this, but the relative measure, it came back incredibly high in glyphosate, which is a really bad chemical.
Jesus Christ.
It's a really bad chemical. It's from the cotton. And so then we also, in dog food, it came back very high in heavy metals. So we're going to basically just do this across all food categories. Baby food, dog food, you know, dog food, cat food, tampons. Tampons came back with
Why'd you point to me when you said tampons? You see that?
Yeah, I mean, you know,
I do happen to have a tampon in right now.
Yeah, yeah, it's high in heavy metals. Yeah, you don't want that.
How much time do we have?
5 more minutes.
Oh, holy shit. I am so happy to meet you, and I am so happy that you are so cool. You know, I was a little nervous. You don't want potentially one of the first immortal beings on the planet to be an asshole. And you are the opposite.
Oh, thanks.
I really love your work.
Thank you.
And you have a very persuasive argument. And I must tell you, like my wife, she stays tuned into all this stuff. But she has to go to really obscure places to get the data about lead and food.
Exactly.
And it's shocking.
Yeah, it is.
When it comes out. And so I feel like what you're doing is a very beautiful thing. And I can't wait for this that for especially the Don't Die. What is the name of it again? Don't Die. What's the thing you're doing?
Certified.
Don't Die. The thing that's going to get you assassinated.
Yeah. So we'll do, I know, so honest,
aren't you worried about that?
I mean, okay, let's be honest.
I'm sorry I said it out loud.
No, it's true though, right? There's no question. I'm going to die, right? It's going to be some kind of super ironic thing, but like, how can that not be the case? Like, I don't want that to happen, but like, are we being real? Like, irony is like the ultimate, you know, currency of the universe. So
no, well, don't worry. We'll digitally clone you, but I think you're going to make it long enough. Okay, last question. I know we only have 5 minutes. Here's the last question. You did list some very pragmatic, simple things that people can do to feel better.
Yeah.
Do you have any more things like that?
I do.
What do you got?
I do. So I'm going to tell you how to change your life.
Okay.
Okay, and it's going to be all free.
Thank you.
Okay.
Are dry eye symptoms frequently interrupting your day? Keep dry eyes off your schedule with Refresh Reliva PF Extra Lubricant Eye Drops, offering an advanced formula to soothe and hydrate your eyes. With innovative hydrocell technology to lock in moisture and prevent further irritation, Refresh Reliva PF Extra gives you lasting relief. Equipped with a soft-squeeze multi-dose bottle featuring a double lockout system that keeps drops sterile so you can feel confident using it. Refresh has been delivering relief from dry eye symptoms for 35 years. It's a track record of success that has earned the trust of physicians and patients alike. You deserve relief from your dry eye symptoms, and your eyes deserve extra. Find Refresh online or in the eye drop section at all major retailers. FSA and HSA eligible.
So sleep, it needs to be your number one life priority.
Okay.
Now that is counterintuitive because right now you probably sleep when you have time or sleep when you're done watching a movie or sleep when you're done with the event or sleep when you're done doing work.
Yep.
So you need to choose your bedtime. I go to bed at 8:30 p.m.
Okay.
Like, you choose your. What time's your bedtime?
You know, horrifically late, but I was so exhausted. I went to bed at 7 and I woke up at 8. I got 12 hours of sleep and I feel like a god today.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but yeah, no, it's chaotic, random, unhealthy.
Okay, let's just say midnight because you're doing your
shows.
Yeah, you're doing your shows. So let's just say by the time you get the show and you get home, 11, midnight?
Midnight.
Okay, let's call it midnight. So let's just say midnight is your bedtime.
Yeah.
So that means every night you want to have your final meal of the day at least by 10 p.m.
Okay.
Okay. Now, if you want to really try to experiment to try to find improvements, try 9, then 8, then 7. But you'll find the earlier you eat and the lighter you eat, the better your sleep's going to be. Now, the way you measure this is, and here's the marker okay. you want to measure. So you want to look at your resting heart rate. So do you have a wearable?
I don't. No, okay. I used to. I don't
right that's now. Fine. All right. So tonight before you go to bed, just check your pulse.
Yeah.
Put your finger by your neck here and just take your pulse.
Okay.
So you want to have a baseline resting heart rate. So let's just say tonight before you go to bed, let's say your heart rate is 60 beats per minute.
Okay.
Okay. Your goal over the next week is to get your heart to be 50 beats per minute.
Is this before I lay down? This should just be, are you saying like as I'm going to bed, check?
Right before you go to bed.
Okay, so I'm still active. I brush my teeth.
Yeah, brush your teeth. And you lay down. You're like, okay, and I'm ready to go. Turn the light off. Measure your heart rate.
Okay.
Right there. And like take a few breaths, you know, like kind of calm yourself down just for a few minutes.
Yeah.
And that's your baseline.
Okay.
So now your goal is to lower your heart rate by doing the following things. So one is the last meal of the day substantially affects your heart rate. So if you have you have a big meal, like pizza and pasta or whatever at 10 p.m.
Yeah.
At 12 p.m., your body's still digesting all the food.
So got it.
It's doing all this work. That means your heart rate's going to be high
because
your heart's yep. pumping to help all the digestion.
Yeah.
So if you eat, let's just say you eat like a 6 p.m. as your final meal. Let's say you eat something light, like some veggies, like fruits, yeah. berries, nuts. By the time midnight comes, your body's almost done with primary digestion, which means your body now has a lot of metabolic capacity.
It's like, okay.
Now I can sleep. Okay. So one is that eat earlier, eat lighter. And you're going to find, as you get better at doing this, you're going to find that some foods will raise your heart rate and some foods will lower your heart rate.
Okay.
Okay. So like breads, carbs, pastas, you know, like those are the ones that I can really jack it.
What about cocaine?
yeah. Asking for a friend. Yeah.
So you're saying I shouldn't do cocaine right before I go to bed.
So if you do an experiment.
Okay.
Okay. So do the cocaine and measure your resting heart rate. And you're probably going to see like 90s, 100.
Yeah.
And that's going to demolish your sleep.
Okay. Okay. I don't do cocaine, but I don't want to cut you off. I just need to know, are there any supplements you recommend for people who have a hard time falling asleep?
Yeah. So let me finish with these habits.
Thank you.
So, okay. So sleep is your number one priority. So now like in your mind, you are a professional sleeper. That is your number one life goal.
Love it.
So you say, now I know what to do. I'm going to lower my resting heart rate. I'm going to measure it. And you start moving your food back earlier and lighter. Now you're also going to eliminate screens in that last part of the night. So between 10 and 12, no screens.
Okay.
Like between 11 and 12, like roughly an hour.
Yeah.
And you want to change your screen color to red on your phone. And also want to eliminate blues. It's like no blue lights.
Okay.
That will ruin your sleep. You also want to be consistent. So if you go to bed at 12, be to bed at 12 every night.
Got it.
Okay. And the reason you do that is because if you go to bed at 2 a.m., you don't like make it up on the other side. You miss your deep sleep window. And that's like when the garbage truck comes through to clean your body full of junk. You miss it.
Got
it. So be on time.
Yeah.
Because if you're not, the garbage truck misses its run.
Wow. Okay?
Be on time.
Okay.
And then you want also to have a wind down routine. So when you get home from your show, right, and like you're thinking through like good joke, bad joke, like this person did well, like, right, you're looping through all your thoughts. You need to have some kind of process where you talk to yourself, where it's like, okay, I hear my concerns. I hear about my new ideas. Like maybe you journal and write down. But you need to like kind of reconcile your thoughts, because if you don't, your head hits a pillow and you're still all aroused from the day. Your heart rate is up because you're thinking about everything. You can't go to sleep because now you're spinning. And you get anxious because you're spinning because you wake up the next morning. And then you wake up in the middle of the night and you're still spinning. So you have to calm down your thoughts. And you have to have some kind of reconciliation process. And then remember on stimulants, if you have caffeine at 6 p.m., that caffeine has a 6-hour half-life, which means that a 6 p.m. coffee is going to leave half a cup of coffee in your body by midnight.
Jesus Christ.
So don't do that. So
if
you're going to have caffeine, push it earlier in the day. And so if your bedtime's midnight, you know, like early afternoon is probably your last window. And even then it's like kind of pushing it.
Yep.
So if you do those five things, what you're going to find is your heart rate is going down. Your sleep quality goes up. Now, when you sleep well, you wake up and you feel amazing.
Yeah.
And when you feel amazing, you want to exercise.
Yep.
And then when you exercise, you feel like you want to eat well. And then you eat well, You want to repeat that cycle.
Yeah.
So don't start with food because food is way too much. It's way too complicated. Like if you like try to stop your bad habits. So if you have a bad night's sleep, your willpower the next day is going to plummet. So if you're facing down like, do I drink or do I have this kind of food? Do I do this kind of bad behavior? Your likelihood of making a bad decision is so much higher on a bad night's sleep. So sleep gives you the superpower of willpower.
Got it.
So sleep, then love exercise, it. And then exercise, but master those habits. Make them non-negotiables in your life. Like never deviate from them. And that will keep you like in a sane state. And then once you accomplish those, then you can start tackling one by one other stuff. Like say like you've got this fast food thing, right? Like try to nip that in the bud. Like instead of two times a week, one time a week.
Yeah.
And then like no times a week. And then so just like slowly chip away at the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You are amazing. Thank you so much. This is a wonderful podcast. And I'm very excited about your documentary on Netflix. Dang it. Don't die. The man who wants to live forever.
Yeah, and you were great. You really picked up the concepts really fast.
Thank you.
Yeah. You moved through the ideas like really swiftly. You captured the synopsis in it.
Thank you.
And I find that these ideas are really hard to talk about because they get blocked by so many of our thoughts.
Sure.
But yes, I really had a great time with you.
Oh, likewise.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Oh man, I'm on board the don't die train. I'm not going to die. I'm excited.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thanks. That was Brian Johnson, everybody. All the links you need to find him will be at DuncanTrussell.com. I want to thank him again for coming on the show and for the delicious bottle of olive oil that he gave me and my family. Come see me out there on the road. I'm going to be at the Denver Comedy Works. After that, the Orange Peel in Asheville, NC. And won't you please like, subscribe, become a member, join the Patreon. I'll see you soon. Bye.